Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. This episode is called Goodbye and Thanks for All the Memes. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
It's going great, Spanners. I'm really going to miss all those memes that Fernando has given us.
I thought the summer break in F1 was supposed to be quiet. Normally, we're scrabbling around and we're not talking about news. We're going, what kind of theme can we do? This is when we call in Chris Catman Stevens for one of his terrible quizzes.
Yeah, and usually you kind of save up content to filter out over the next 4 weeks. We certainly haven't been short of content this time around, have we?
No, we haven't. We could do one of those god-awful retro race reviews soon if we run out of news, but it's unlikely that we will do so. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. We're also joined by Matt to Rumpets, producer of Awful GP Retro Reviews. How's it going, Matt?
Yes, delightfully awful, enjoyably awful.
No, I've actually had requests recently, quite a few email requests saying, hey, where are more of the historical race reviews?
Well, I tell you what, as soon as I can actually find Anil, we will do another one.
Excellent. We're also joined by Jake Sanson. How's it going, Jake? I haven't seen you for hour.
Yeah, about an hour. I'm going very well. Thank you very much for inviting me onto the Missed Apex podcast. I know I ruin it every time I come on, so thank you for allowing me another chance to redeem myself.
That's okay, man. I've been ruining your commentary for about 12 hours at Daytona D-Max, so I figure it evens out. Chris, I've been very busy lately, so you've been kind enough to put together a new show. You are, after all, an F1 journalist, so it shouldn't be too hard for you. So why don't you tell me what is Big Dirty News? But basically everything is big, dirty news. Where do you want to start?
Well, I don't know if you guys have heard, but this Spanish guy, his name's Fernando Alonso. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's going to be not racing in F1. It's like a big deal, apparently. People are like,
when did that happen?
Well, let's talk about the reasons, because there are several, and Fernando has made public comments that I think everyone disagrees with.
All right. Okay, Chris, let's start with then. Why is Fernando Alonso not retiring from F1? Why is Fernando Alonso not racing in Formula One in 2019?
Well, he says that the sport has become too predictable, which I think we'd all agree he wouldn't be saying that if he was driving a Mercedes or a Ferrari at the moment.
Yeah, and he actually gave that reason in an interview. He says, oh, it's too predictable. In fact, he even cited that in 2004, or he named lots of years and said it was more unpredictable. But one of the years that he mentioned, Michael Schumacher won 13 out of 16 races and won the title by August.
Well, that specific comment was a little bit misinterpreted because he was talking about his own personal season rather than kind of as a whole. But I do kind of see what he means by that. But at the same time, you know, I do have to disagree. You know, F1 was not brilliant 15 years ago, and it's not perfect now, but I think it's a bit better. And he's racing in the World Endurance Championship where his only real competition are his teammates. So I find that to be a little bit rich, but you know, it is basically because his talents are wasted in Formula One at the moment with the car he's driving.
So let me ask Matt Trumpets then. He's saying that the reasons are that F1 is predictable, and he even specifically said, I can tell you what's going to happen in Spa and Monza. Really? I don't think F1's been more unpredictable in the hybrid era. I couldn't start to tell you which team is going to turn up with the faster car in Spa or Monza. And I bet if we did a straw poll amongst all the top commentators and journalists, it would be 50-50 between Ferrari and Mercedes, and at least half of us would be wrong.
Well, let's start with the most obvious argument, which is, for the most part, he probably couldn't even predict whether or not his teammate will actually finish or not due to mechanical reasons. So I think unpredictability, you just got to chuck it right out the window. But yeah, Ferrari, Mercedes are in a gargantuan battle to win the Constructors' Championship. The Drivers' Championship will almost certainly come down to either Lewis or Vettel. And since none of those questions are settled, then only if he predicts, oh, someone in a car will win the race, you know, yeah, you got me there. That's predictable. Otherwise, I think what he's complaining about is the predictable thing is that he will not be winning a race anytime soon with the team he has been forced to sign with. And I'm not sure exactly whose fault it is that nobody else will take him.
It's very strange to consider that we're talking about a guy who's won two world championships, hasn't won a world title for 12 years because of the various choices he has made. This is what we're talking about here, effectively. You know, this is a guy who is clearly able to win these races, but nobody wants to work with him. He's very lucky that McLaren even want to keep him on side. The reason they want to keep him on side is because he's a big name. Now, if you actually tried to get, you know, in the height of his fame, nobody wanted to work with Nigel Mansell because he was a whinger and he was a whiner. Fernando Alonso is the new Nigel Mansell. He just whinges and whines and nobody wants to work with him.
Let's address something from the live chat. And hello, live chat. You can join in by going to YouTube and searching for Missed Apex Podcast. Elfwald says, ah, instead of the usual Hamilton fest with passive Alonso hate, I think they're saying replace with passive Alonso hate, they're letting the Alonso hate flow in force tonight. Embrace the dark side. Firstly, the only Hamilton fest stuff is me saying I'm a Hamilton fan. You might notice that we don't actually dwell on Lewis Hamilton that much. I don't think we've ever done a segment of news where we've gone, let's talk about how brilliant Lewis Hamilton is and why he's so brilliant. However, I don't think this is Alonso hate. I think we all universally agree that Alonso is one of the top talents of the last 15 years. Anyone on the panel disagree with that? No. So we're not slating him. But he has wasted a potential because he's only won two world championship titles, Chris.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that, isn't it, really? And there are several reasons for why that has been the case. And a lot of it has come down to the fact that he's made a lot of the wrong choices at the wrong times. I mean, it left Renault for McLaren at the right time, but ended up with a teammate that he did not expect to have competition from, for example.
Right. And in the chat room, Russell Coburn makes the rather excellent point that if we're going to talk about whose fault that is, it's not just necessarily Alonso's fault. There's also a certain extravagant Italian, Flavio Briatore, who has been banished from the sport forever, and more or less rightfully so, as far as I'm concerned, who is still very much hooked up with Alonso and has been, quote unquote, I guess, guiding him this whole time.
It's a very good point because, let's be fair, Briatore might have been the man who gave Michael Schumacher his two world titles, but the second he joined Ferrari, he dropped Briatore like a lead brick. You know, he didn't want anything more to do with him. And ever since then, Briatore has basically got a long reputation of having killed the careers of various racing drivers. Alesi, Berger, obviously, you could argue they're probably on the way to doing that themselves. But Alonso, Webber still hanging on in there, managing Webber despite him being a Red Bull driver. Trulli, you know, all these guys, basically, Briatore has tainted these particular racing drivers. And fair play, Alonso just really, a bit like Hamilton, has never really learned how to look after himself without causing enemies.
Sparkles.
But Fernando himself is responsible for the worst decision he ever made, which was to leave Ferrari at the end of 2014 and to go to McLaren, because he did not believe in a post-De Montezemolo Ferrari just when they started to come good. And who knows, he could be leading this year's championship had he not made that decision.
It's worse than that, though, isn't it, Jake? It's worse than that. He would have probably won the 2017 World Championship that Sebastian Vettel tried his best to throw away. And on top of that, yes, he would probably be not in the wall in the German Grand Prix and leading this year's World Championship.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he probably would have won last year's championship in the same vehicle as Vettel, and he would be leading this year's championship. It's startling that Fernando Alonso seems to get cold feet the second anything isn't quite going his way, but he has no longevity. He basically wants everything to be right now and everything be okay. I mean, you could argue, yes, he spent 4 years at Ferrari and didn't get a world title out of it, but I think you'll find that Schumacher had to wait 5 years for his first title before everything was perfect. Several others have waited a long time for those opportunities to come along. And, you know, they've had to work at it. Button had to spend 9 years of failing before he got it all together. Alonso just doesn't have any patience. He's got no staying power.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that universally everybody says that it is Alonso's fault. And I think Joe Saywood tweeted that he's a team wrecker, which is a shame, Chris, because as a personality, he's kind of exactly what we want. He's fast to start with. He's aggressive. He is charismatic. He says what he thinks in every way, shape or form. He's the Formula One hero that we've wanted and we've had him. So, you know, we're not just slating him. The reason we're being so harsh about his career choices is that we expected so much more of him. Like, no one's really sat there complaining going, oh, Barrichello, he could have been a four-time world champion. We're just not bothered. We let that drift away. With Alonso, we're going, that's a real, that could have been something special.
Yeah, great for the fans, great for the sport in general and the spectacle, nightmare for the teams. I mean, he was quoted as being chaotic by Red Bull, I think it was, and that's why they're not going to take him on board. And I can understand why he has a sort of lack of patience. And when we talk about why he could have done so much more, 11 more points in his career would give him 5 world titles. He so narrowly missed out in 2007, 2010, and 2012. And all those are titles you would have said he probably should have won and were expected to have won.
Well, hang on a minute. 2007, he lost to a rookie. So that's kind of his fault.
He let that situation get to him. He handled that absolutely appallingly. And he destroyed the team he was in around him and lost the championship by 1 point because of it.
Now, even though I've heard from Jake for 12 hours and in about 7 hours of commentary, I got precisely 7 sentences in, let's hear from him again.
Do you know what? I find it hilarious that 12 months after Fernando Alonso told the press at the Italian Grand Prix at Monza that he didn't feel like Formula One was a sport because he got balked by Massa in qualifying, 12 months later, he was the architect of one of the biggest Formula One scandals in history, the way that he turned on his teammate because he was not quite as slow as he wanted it to be. Alonso is such a flaming hypocrite, unfortunately. And this is one of the things I really can't tolerate with him, in the fact that he's there at McLaren going, well, Formula One's boring and predictable. It's not really good. It's not, because we don't know from one race to the next whether Vettel's going to win or Hamilton's going to win.
Okay, wait. Jake, let's be fair. Alonso is somebody who's been in the public eye. If you or I were in the public eye that long, time makes hypocrites of us all, does it not?
Yeah, it does. But at the end of the day, Fernando Alonso is supposed to be one of the archetypal role models and legends of the modern era. And he just handles himself like a spoiled child most of the time. I mean, he's arguing that, you know, I'm leaving F1 because it's too predictable. What are you doing in WEC? Oh, yes, that's right. You're in the only manufacturer team with the best equipment, the best car, and nobody can challenge you. You've won three races in the row now. Yeah, that's not predictable in the slightest, is it, Fernando?
Well, Trumpets, that segues us nicely onto what is Fernando Alonso doing next?
Well, amongst other things, he's doing WEC for Toyota. And I would just point out to Jake that given Toyota's inability to win some races where they did have competition, that may or may not be as an assured thing as you're wanting to make it out. He's also been rumored to be looking very seriously at an IndyCar drive, although there's not, I don't have any kind of independent confirmation of a specific team just yet. But before we go on, I want to chuck in Andy Whitney's comment that a grid full of Alonzos would be epic and pose the challenging question to the rest of you who were paying attention back in 2007. Was that the genesis of Alonso is difficult reputation that has followed him to this very day? Or did he already indeed possess that? This was a question I wanted to spend some time looking into, but I was rather sadly forced to spend time bodyboarding at the beach and drinking gin and tonics all day.
Chris?
Just on the IndyCar thing, he has got a test lined up in the next couple of months, I think it is. So we don't know which team it will be just yet, but I am fully expecting him to go for a full-on IndyCar assault next year. And that question from the chat room is a real interesting. I think Fernando's always been like that. You know, he's always known how to make situation benefit him, or at least, you know, work out how to. Sometimes it's blown up in his face at him a little bit, but he is not a team player, really. He goes out for himself, and he is, ironically though, he is one of the team's best assets. So there's a slight catch 22 of that one.
So Matt asks an interesting question about the genesis of his reputation. Now, as a team wrecker, it's kind of like if you have a friend and they have an affair with a married person and that person leaves their spouse to be with them, you are not then overly surprised if that person then also cheats on them and moves on. That's just, you know, that's a recurring thing that happens over and over again. Doesn't mean it's always going to happen. But if you are a team that knows that Fernando Alonso took a bunch of your information and shared it with your deadly rivals after you moved on, that makes you very nervous about employing that person in what is a very secretive sport, Matt. I think you might be right that was the start of a bad reputation. And then the revelations about Crashgate, hard to separate Alonso from that.
Yeah, it is. And he has been on the edge of disaster several times. With behavior that, in hindsight, could be described at best as dubious, and at worst as just completely amoral. And so, in that sense, he had already been involved in situations like that before he came to McLaren. But in terms of his reputation with his teammates and stuff like that, I don't recall hearing anything prior to that about him being that way. But maybe he was. So that's what I'm asking.
I think the thing that's going to resonate with me about Fernando Alonso for the rest of eternity is the fact that why on earth did McLaren re-employ him given those circumstances? That was lunacy, in my opinion, because, you know, they've already proven that he's not a team player. So why would you pick on the guy who's obviously ratted you out once before and re-sign him? And secondly, the other mad thing about it is, you know, basically, Fernando is clearly a guy who has absolutely no interest in anybody but himself. And I cannot for any single solitary second be convinced of the fact that he knew nothing about Crashgate. I just cannot think that someone who is that involved in Briatore as a management team, there's no way he'll admit to it.
Okay.
But there's no way he didn't know about Crashgate.
Okay, but we'll stop you there. And Sparkles, before you continue your point, just to be clear, there is no evidence of a link between Fernando Alonso and Crashgate, the event commonly known as Crashgate, Singapore 2008, and Miss Apex is not making any claims that there is any link or evidence. Chris, your point.
McLaren had to ask themselves one question. Did they feel lucky? No, they did not. I mean, coming in with Honda was always going to be a massive risk. And the reason Fernando went for it is because surely Honda and McLaren will become a championship winning force inside 3 years. That was the original kind of spectrum that they were looking at. And it, again, blew up in their faces. And like I said before, that was the worst decision he's made in his career. But just to kind of answer the McLaren question there.
Christopher Fonseca says the crash was obviously Ericsson's fault. Not sure he even started by then. All right, Chris. It does feel like we were Alonso bashing. We're not. Really, we should be celebrating what an amazing career we've had and what a great character we've had in F1.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, he is honestly one of the greatest drivers to ever sit inside a Formula One car.
I agree.
You just have to go back to that 2012 season in that massively underperforming Ferrari where he took it to within 3 points of a world title. That right there is Fernando Alonso in a nutshell.
Now then, also, the reason we have been a little bit hard on Alonso, had it just been the retirement announcement, I think we would have just accepted that and gone, okay, this is it. He's not in F1 in 2019. It's not a retirement announcement. He could come back at any time, just like Button. But he did this leaving video. So he's done two things that have kind of got people's back up. Firstly, he said in that leaving video, oh, you know, F1, I've loved you. I've lived this with you. But now you can know, I'm chasing challenges that F1 cannot provide. And you just go, no, that's not true, because there is a challenge out there to win your third world title. It's just that you can't put yourself in the position to do it. The other one was obviously the claim that it's because it's poor racing. And I think that's what's got people's backs up. If he'd have just said, thank you very much, thanks for all the memories, I'm off, I think people would have gone, yeah, fair enough. I think we all get that. Have a great life and stuff. But the way he did it, people are just, you know, just answering those points. The other thing is, I guess he's off to chase the triple crown. And for a moment, I really want to compare this to the Texas sharpshooter fallacy, where you shoot random bullets into a barn door and then you draw targets around them afterwards. If he's chasing his third world title, there's no way we're talking about the triple crown. The triple crown is a nonsense insofar as comparing it to any multiple of F1 world titles. The Triple Crown is nothing compared to that. Nobody who's got a chance of winning the F1 World Championship is going to go, do you know what? Don't give me that championship winning seat because I need to go and complete the Triple Crown.
Spanners, that is the wrongest thing you've ever said on this
show. Oh, really?
Agreed.
You telling me there is a single F1 driver who would turn down a Mercedes seat next season to go and chase the Triple Crown? Any motorsport driver, get out of town.
Have they already won the world championship? You know, it depends on who you are.
Yeah, yes. They've, okay, we'll do that. A three-time world champion has a championship winning seat lined up and he's going to turn it down to go and chase the triple crown.
Yes, exactly. There's a ridiculous reason we've all got our hands up to argue with you here.
Go on then, do it.
Okay. All right, fine. Thank you. All right, so it's a simple question. And there's two different questions. The first question is, what is the probability of someone winning the triple crown? Well, to which I can say, well, how many triple crown winners have we had in all of history? Oh, that's one. So now, on the other hand, let's compare it to how many Formula One champions we've had in history. Is it more than one?
Oh my God, right, yeah. Matt, are you aware of the Guinness Book of Records where people set a lot of very, very random world records just to be a world record holder? Where they go, ah, okay, well, I didn't win in that event. However, I have got the record for spinning 18 plates on my chin with three arms using only 17 Havana cigars rolled on the thighs of virgins.
Please allow me to finish. It had already been established as a thing to win the triple crown that way. So you can't say it's a random accretion of events. It's been looked at through a specific lens and has been established as a particular kind of benchmark. And it is much more rare of a thing to do, obviously, than just simply winning the Formula One World Championship. But the question you pose is a different one, which is, would any current Formula One driver with a chance to win the championship leave to attain that? And I would say only if they had already beaten Michael Schumacher's record.
Good.
That would be my answer, because you actually...
No, that's fair. That's fair. That's a fair answer.
I personally think that it depends on how old they are. Because if they've won a world championship or come close to winning a world championship or like done Monaco, if they're over 35, why shouldn't they go and chase the triple? Because you can race at Indy 500 till you're in your 50s. You can race at Le Mans till you're in your 60s. There's no time limit on it. Montoya will probably be trying to win the triple crown until he's in his late 50s because all he needs is a decent Le Mans drive and he'll get it. So he's still looking at that. He would have been on the grid with Porsche this year had Porsche carried on. But it is you can't turn around and say that, you know, Formula One's a bigger deal than the Triple Crown.
Yes, it is. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
No. It's three completely different disciplines of motor racing in completely different types of car, completely different types of environment, completely different risk levels, completely different disciplines of athleticism.
Okay,
you can't say Formula One, you can be good at.
Jake. Right. The difference is, there is simply a higher standard in Formula One than there is for any of those other disciplines. And that's not up for debate. So it's much easier to do those other things.
I disagree because you're taking a much more of a physical load at Indy, 240 miles an hour.
Hang on a minute. There's more of a physical load for powerlifting. But the fact of the matter is, there's more people trying to get into F1. There's more competitiveness. Therefore, the standard is higher. Sparkles.
You got to remember, we are talking about the three most prestigious events in motorsporting history. Is the level of competition or the skill set in each of those three any higher or lower than the other? No. The point is, they are all exceptional things and only the best get into them. We say Formula One is the pinnacle of motorsport. And if you are good at Formula One, that's it. You are amazing. But there are people who are great at other forms of motorsport that don't end up in F1 and find their career quite happily in IndyCar or the World Endurance Championship.
I agree with that.
Doesn't make any less than people in Formula One. No, it doesn't.
I disagree with that bit. I agree that there's lots of fulfilling careers, but F1 is the pinnacle of motorsport and it has the highest standard of drivers.
It is a specific skill set that doesn't necessarily mean it's full of the best.
Trumpets, last word on this before we move on.
Oh, thank you for that. This will be so much fun. So regarding that higher standard, there are fewer seats in Formula One than in IndyCar. Therefore, the competition for those seats is higher, yes. However, if one were to examine the differences between winners and second place between IndyCar and Formula One, what you would find is that IndyCar as a driver's series is infinitely more competitive. And at the top, it's not tenths. It's not hundreds, but it's thousands that separates winners and losers on a regular basis, with the addition of having to manage driving not just road courses, but ovals. So in terms of if we are looking at the top, then I'm going to have to say, I don't know. I think you could make an argument, certainly for IndyCar, having also some of the finest open wheel drivers on the market. And you have to be that if you're going to win.
If you've been affected by any of the topics or debates that you've heard today, email spannersready@gmail.com. Look, it's what we do here. I love it. I love it when we have a difference of opinion. Join the conversation, as they say on cheesy radio shows. We have a Facebook page. You can post there and just say Spanners is an idiot. Or you can at Missed Apex F1 or at Spanners Ready and say, hey, brother, we agree with you, brah. Thanks for fighting the power against those three idiots. Do all those things. Get in touch. Let's have a chat about it. Right, Chris, let's talk about the fallout of this. Because essentially, in Formula One, we've had a lot of seasons where we've hung on to older drivers. A lot of the time because of their reputation. A lot of the time because of sponsors. A lot of time because of pay driver deals. Here, we have lost one of the stalwarts of Formula One. Absolutely no doubt. And it's left a big seat up for grabs in that it's a key seat. It is still a seat people want. People will still want to drive for McLaren. What is going to happen?
It will be fellow Spaniard. And actually, the man that he has idolized is the man he is replacing, which I think is quite funny. But Carlos Sainz making a sideways or slightly backwards step, you might argue, going to McLaren. It's an interesting choice, isn't it? But on a multi-year deal, apparently, with McLaren.
Yeah, I have intel that Carlos Sainz was given an offer to go to Red Bull and he chose against it. he decided he did not want
what?
To return
Wait a minute,
to
what?
The Red Bull fold.
That's so, huge. Are you sure?
Absolutely, yeah. My source is not identifiable, but it is accurate. Apparently, Carlos Sainz was given the option to go to Red Bull, and he chose against it. He chose to go to McLaren on a multi-year deal. Now, that is shocking, considering the current political climate of Formula One, but that is what he has chosen.
So we kind of briefly discussed this during our live show at Buckmore Park, didn't we, about how there has been tension between the Verstappens and the Sainzes, and that is probably one of the key reasons that Sainz has chosen to go elsewhere.
Since we're engaging in blatant speculation and rumor, and Jake, apparently you have an intelligence source, may I ask, am I the only one who's seen the occasional rumor about Newey going to Renault?
That is an interesting rumor. I haven't read anything about it, but considering where we currently are, that wouldn't surprise me because he obviously has history. Red Bull is becoming so much more Team Verstappen / Marco. Love, love, love. Oh, it's all about Verstappen. Apparently, my source has also informed me that the reason Carlos Sainz did actually turn down Red Bull was because of that very possibility. The fact that they're basically becoming Team Verstappen. He did not want to be involved in that team. He wanted a chance to fight for the top spot of a team. So going to McLaren actually gives him a better chance of being a team leader.
And he has actually been released from his Red Bull contract now. And a part of the...
What?
The
Wait.
Play.
That's huge.
Yeah, he has.
That's,
yeah,
that's massive.
He has been released.
So hang on a minute. Chris, are you telling me right here now, this is news to me, you're saying Sainz isn't a Red Bull driver now?
Yeah, because remember he was on loan to Renault,
yeah.
But still under a Red Bull contract. There was an option to release him this September, and McLaren had to wait for that. But the Ricciardo decision to leave has given them kind of enough cause to pull the plug on him early, as it were.
Well, I mean, that's big news in itself, isn't it? Basically, Red Bull have essentially dumped Sainz. They've said that's a dead end.
No, Sainz has dumped Red Bull.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's
he
different.
Chose to get rid of them. Absolutely. He chose to get rid of them. And what this causes is a nightmare scenario for Red Bull because basically they either have to sign Gasly to the team or they have to bring in someone else.
Sparkles.
Why is it a nightmare scenario for Pierre Gasly to come up to the team? Because
that's going
to happen.
It was a nightmare for Gasly to join Red Bull because Gasly is talented enough to be at Red Bull alongside Verstappen and could probably beat him. I'm more thinking in terms of the bigger picture for Red Bull because there are two teams on the Formula One grid. And so if you promote Gasly from Toro Rosso now, what you have effectively is Brendan Hartley staying on. There has been suggestion that he's not good enough to stay at Toro Rosso, which is baloney. He's perfectly good enough to stay at Toro Rosso. And whoever would partner him, that's a bit of a minefield. And there's rumors flying around all over the place. They want to promote Dan Ticktum. They can't promote Dan Ticktum because even if he wins Formula 3, he won't have enough super license points. Plus, there's his ban, which makes the whole thing a little bit iffy anyway. There's rumors that Lando Norris would go into that seat on a temporary loan, akin to the whole sort of Carlos Sainz thing. I have a feeling Lando would go for that, considering how many points Gasly scored. But that's going to make political climate even more interesting. Or there's even rumours about Vern.
No, Vern won't. Vern has a contract with Tachita. He won't be. He was just approached by a Formula One team as an inquiry. Said, do you have a contract for next year? Which he does. But there is a lot of sort of hype around this Toro Rosso seat. The favourite does seem to be Lando Norris. Which is odd because I think 6 months ago we were saying he could do with another year in F2, really, couldn't he? And now it looks like he's going to get an F1 promotion. But that could also be Stoffel Vandoorne who gets it as well if he gets let out of McLaren.
Hey, did you guys catch that at Buckmore Park they had a Lando Norris karting event the week after our event?
Really? You mean somebody
Lando
did something
Norris
like
that? Karting event.
I'm just kidding. I kid. It was a very good event. Guys, who else do we fancy for that chair? So you don't reckon Jev can come in there? And even if Jean-Éric Vergne was a candidate, he wouldn't want to jump back into Toro Rosso. He'd want to be respected as a world champion from another series, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. I could see him maybe trying to break a contract for Mercedes or Ferrari, maybe even Renault. I mean, he is French and they are spending lots of money. But unless it's a team he thinks he's going to win with, there's no way he's leaving where he is now. He's incredibly successful at WEC. He's incredibly successful at Formula E, and he is now a world champion. And so it's going to have to be the right offer for him to consider giving all that up. And hats off to him. He has gone out and proved Red Bull they were absolutely wrong to drop him like they did.
100% agree with you, Matt. Big respect for John Eric Vernon, what he's been doing
this year. Wait a minute, Sparkles. Oh. No, you're only saying that because you did a top 10 Formula E drivers thing, and you put John Eric Vernon at the top, and then you're all happy that John Eric Vernon then quote tweeted you and said, oh yes, I completely agree with this guy who's saying I'm the best ever.
Okay. I already put him in my top 10, and I will just, let me give you this stat. 4 weeks, 3 different series, 3 wins and 1 podium. Enough.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Said. Anyway, let's finish up on this Toro Rosso thing, because we've got to remember the key strategy, the queen in this game of chess being played by Toro Rosso and McLaren is James Key. And if McLaren were to loan a driver to Toro Rosso, will they get James Key in return? It could be Norris. It could be Van Dorn. Apparently, and Anil was saying in our group chat, wasn't he, that apparently Frans Toss is quite a big fan of Stoffel Van Dorn, but Van Dorn also has options at Sauber, the Fred Vasseur team that won him an ART GP2 title, although it seems like there is already a backlog of drivers around there. But he could be out of Formula One altogether. There have been some comments that seem to defend Van Dorn, but then also leave him out in the cold a little bit. Maybe Esteban Ocon's going to end up getting the seat at McLaren because Mercedes need to find somewhere for him.
Now
it's
then.
A whole smash
now
going
then.
On there.
That is a whole story in itself. I'm going to look between Sparkles and Trumpets to see who wants to talk about Ocon out of you guys. Oh, it's actually Jake. Well, let's have Jake and then Sparkles. But basically, Ocon being a Mercedes driver, there's a lot going on under the surface, and Toto Wolff seems to be the driving force behind that.
I think it very much depends on who Lawrence Stroll wants to keep in the second car at Force Stroll. Because there's rumours going around that Lance will be in the car in time for Spa. If that's the case, you've got to ditch 2 very comfortable drivers in a very strong team who know everything about that team. Perez, who's brilliant. Ocon, who's brilliant. How do you ditch a brilliant driver and find a decent seat for him? Now, the automatic decision would be to swap Stroll for whoever they replace, which means that Ocon might have a safer chance at Williams because of the Mercedes link. But Toto Wolff may want to keep Ocon at Force India because it's almost very nearly a Mercedes B team. So where does that leave Perez? Does he go to Williams? Technically, that could work for Williams because he does bring masses of Mexican dollars. But I hear tell that Haas want him because he's a top North American racing driver. So how's that going to work long term?
Jake, you've been talking for ages. Let's hear from Sparkles, as much as I hate him equally to how much I hate you after a full day of commentary.
If Force India are needing money, you know they'll want to keep Perez. But there were teams saying they didn't want to help out Force India because they didn't want it to become a Mercedes-B team, which would very much suggest that now that they are going to come out of administration at the end of the month, properly and fully, that Mercedes are going to have closer links within the team. But then who has got more power at play here, Mercedes or the investors?
But Matt, to be fair, Mercedes-B team, that makes sense. Red Bull have one. Ferrari have like seven.
It kind of does, except for, I don't know, this word irony keeps on rocketing around in my head. Do we all remember back at the beginning of the season when Williams was a team that refused to let Force India get an early delivery of their prize money? And who is it that's been complaining about everyone being a B team to the top two manufacturers? And yet, once Force India come out of administration, somehow Williams seems to have absolutely engineered the outcome they were seeking least, which is basically they will both be in thrall, vassal states to the great Lord Mercedes, and they're going to get rid of they're going to buy gearboxes, and it's all done and over with. And it's just funny how things work out like that sometimes, isn't it, Jake?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I watched the Williams movie again recently, and the way they are handling this whole merry-go-round scenario of the silly season is totally Williams. You know, they are the last bastions, the last independents on the grid. Everybody else has a higher political agenda with another team or another big sponsor. Williams is the only team that are basically going it alone, doing it their own way. And I love them for that. And actually ditching Lance Stroll gives them an opportunity to take back the control of their own entity. Now, does that give them a chance to bring in George Russell and maybe have Sorokin, because there's a little bit of financial stability there? I would love to see a Sorokin George Russell team next year, because I have a feeling that could actually make progress to bring Williams back a little further. Sorokin's kind of been in Stroll's shadow. He doesn't have to be anymore. I'd love to see Sorokin and Russell actually making progress with Williams and bringing them back to where they should be.
Well, I tell you what, Matt, we're going to find out a lot about Sorokin next season, assuming Stroll is going to Force India. And we'll talk about Force India in a second, because when is Stroll going to Force India? But assuming he is, we've got Sorokin possibly up against Kubica, halfway through the season, because he is the reserve driver. And listening to the F1 podcast interview with Robert Kubica, he certainly rates himself above those two guys. But we're going to see Sorokin possibly up against George Russell, who Mercedes certainly think is a great talent. And then at the same time, we may well see Stroll up against Perez. So we're going to suddenly answer all the questions we've had about Williams drivers this season.
Well, I don't think about the Williams driver that we had questions about. I don't think too many people have questions about Stroll anymore.
I'd like to make a bold suggestion for Williams, in that for the second half of the season, now that Stroll is gone, if he's going to go, we still don't know if he's going to join Force India, but if he does, they should put Kubica in the car for the rest of the season. Now, here's my argument. It's the ultimate way to assess whether or not he is ready.
Yep.
Because you've only got to deal with him for 3 months. Now, after the 3 months, you can say, okay, Robert, it was fun. It was great. Well done for getting back in the car, but you're not ready to go for a full-time season tilt. At least you've given him a chance. You've given that story a completion.
Yeah.
That way he's achieved what he's achieved. The fans get what they want. Williams get the publicity from it, and hopefully a bit more money thrown at them as well, because they're the heroes of the hour. They can go into 2019 back to plan A, and at least then you've given Kubica a chance. If he manages to succeed, then they're the heroes anyway. They've won. They've done the right thing.
Now, it's tempting to think of Robert Kubica as this kid who came into Formula One, impressed, then he had an accident, and now he's been fighting his way back, and will he get his big chance again? Now, hang on a minute. Robert Kubica is the same age as Lewis Hamilton. Even despite his injuries, he's had massive experience in motorsport. He's gone off and done a lot of other motorsports. He's been doing motorsports that allow him to continue with his limitations while he has been improving, and that's his words. So I don't think Williams need to protect Robert Kubica. I think they need to ask him honestly, as a grown, mature man with a lot of talent, do you want this shot? If he fails, it's on him. And you're right, it's only 3 months. So I don't think there's this kind of like, oh, we don't want to expose him. It's almost like we don't want to ruin the myth of Robert Kubica. We won't. If he comes back to Formula One and he doesn't do well, it's because he had an injury and he couldn't get back. That doesn't tarnish how good he was in the before time. All right, Chris, tell me more about Force India, because you've put it in the notes So I assume there's some developments. Tell me what's going to happen and reveal to me what's going to happen in Spa and who's going to be driving.
Well, I can't say who's going to be driving. And I would have thought that we'd have got some answers to the, whether these it's rumors
so,
about...
It's so close.
Yeah, the driver swap happening immediately, apparently. But in 5 days' time, they're going to be out there for FP1. So I guess we'll see how that one pans out over the course of this week. But in terms of the car, they are going to receive an immediate upgrade package, apparently worth half a second a lap. If not, it will come at Monza, but 99% it'll happen at Spa, and they're going to receive immediate funding and plus a little bit more at the end of the month once the move out of administration is complete.
So I think it's going to stay pretty much as it is for a while. I'd like to think that Stroll's going to get into the car immediately, and you'd think, well, Lawrence Stroll owns the team, so of course he will. But there's a very good point that's been made on the chat by Artemy X, who says, I don't think Stroll is already gone. They'll probably wait till 2019 at this point. There's a lot of contracts that may not be as easy to break as everyone imagines.
Money.
I have a feeling that, yeah, well, money is going to be the deciding factor here. And Lawrence obviously holds the keys to the team now. But at the same time, do you risk putting Lance into a car he doesn't know and looking even more embarrassing? I think you maybe want to keep Perez and Ocon to finish the season and then give Lance the chance to step up. Maybe I'm just being a little bit realistic. I don't know.
Matt, before I go to you, let's just look at what the chat room's saying. Artemy X, over the race, it's hard to say, but he's at least as good when nothing's wrong, but everything keeps being wrong. I think he's talking about Kubica, is he there?
Sorokin.
Hansink, it seems that WMR needs one's money above all. Will Kubica bring that? He does bring some sponsorship, doesn't he? Let's see. Sassy Matt Mondal, but Stroll, go away and say Kubica didn't help like he did to Massa. Someone's asking whether Bradley Philpott has a super license. I don't think so, but he did get a class win at the VLN at the Nordschleife. So congratulations to Bradley Philpott. He's had a hell of a season. Really, really glad for him. And I think that's it for now, Matt. So you continue your point.
Congratulations. You almost managed to make me forget it with that lengthy recitation, but I've held on to it with the last of my fingernails here. And first of all, I have to say, I do like you pronounce, Jake, the word Lance the chance. And that I like that rhymes. That could be like a nickname if he could actually drive anything. But more to the point, you were like, oh, I don't know if putting him in the car and having him do worse would be embarrassing. I don't think you get the fact that these people are beyond embarrassment no matter what they do. He's not going to be embarrassed by his performance, because if his performance is poor, it is absolutely 100% unequivocally somebody else's fault.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, I'm just looking at sort of ancient history from when Massa had his injury in 2009 at Ferrari, and then mid-season, Fisichella got a second place at Spa to Raikkonen, and then the next race he was in a Ferrari and was pathetic for the rest of the season. And Fisichella's not a bad racing driver. So I wonder, do they want that on their conscience? But when Lawrence owns the team, it probably doesn't make a difference. You're right.
Hey, Sparkles, do you remember in the before time, back in the long, long ago, I asked you about Force India?
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that about 10 years ago or something like that?
No one remembers.
No. Just to kind of finish up on that point then, actually, about these upgrades, the target for them is to try and get rid of the issues that they had early on in the season where they were falling behind on development.
Make up for Lance.
Because of poor wind tunnel to track correlation. I know that's something you find incredibly interesting, Matt. We had a whole field day with that on Red Bull last year.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, but you know who is bringing an upgrade floor? I believe Renault has a new floor. Is that not true?
Yeah, that's actually the next topic on the agenda.
Oh, super. In that case, I don't know. We haven't had a bumper for a while. Is that the sort of thing like a smart little podcast should do? Hi, everyone, and welcome to Radio Mist Apex. Lots of stuff coming up for you today. Chris Rainbow Sparkles will give opinions that are wrong, and Matt Trumpets will give correct opinions that take 4 hours. Now, let's talk about Renault after listening to Beyonce. No, there's no Beyonce. You just make the point, Chris.
But now a word from our sponsors. It's me.
I tell you what, we've got a really good sponsor next week, Chris. You know who it is, and it's really relevant, and it's the sort of thing that we would have talked about anyway, and I'm so excited.
Oh, I cannot wait for that. Are you trying to lure me back on for the Spa show now?
I am. get on for Spa, Autosport. Come on. They're no missed Apex, are they? Right. Tell me about Renault.
Okay. So let's pick up with the floor because Matt's already brought it up. They will have a new floor plus some other aero parts that are aimed to also be used for.
Sorry, Hansik has just said, is the sponsor compression socks? No, it's not. No, shut up, people who listen to The Legal Show, which, by the way, was really good. I listened back. I really enjoyed that one. Sorry, Chris, you carry on. The floor.
It was a fantastic show. Yes, so a new floor for Spa, plus some other aero parts that are aimed at 2019 as well. So I think for the rest of the season, you will see upgrades that don't really affect the front wing because they're all being changed next season and all the development is going to be further back. But why haven't we seen more development from Renault? They have put it down to a lack of efficiency from the actual Enstone team. There was a fantastic couple articles on Autosport about this, about how the staff has nearly doubled or is going to double by the end of the year. At the moment, they're up to 700 staff from 470 odd at the Enstone team, which has hurt the production of parts, and any developments that they have made have been delayed, and any upgrades that end up making it onto the car only keep them just about in the same development pace as the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull. So they're increasing, but the others are increasing at a very similar rate and they're not actually closing that gap.
Trumpets, you always have things to say about Renault.
Yeah, well, this is really interesting. And I'm going to go back and touch on the Nui rumors. If they are really investing that kind of money, and if indeed they have managed or might potentially manage to tempt him away from Red Bull, then you are talking about something very, very, very different coming up for the new set of regulations. And that might even be what they were talking about, not even for between 2019 and 2021, but from 2021 forwards. He's been at Red Bull a long time. He was formerly at McLaren till they foolishly failed to meet some minor demand of his that made him irritable. And then Red Bull scooped him up. And I'm just going to wonder, like, you know, he had stepped away. He wanted to design boats and stuff. And suddenly Red Bull wasn't winning. And suddenly he was back working full time on the team. And I just kind of wonder if maybe we're about to have another one of those seminal ground shifts.
You touched on that point, actually, because I thought Adrian Newey was retired. Last I heard, he was retired. Why is he suddenly working again? I don't get it. I don't understand. Why is it these people can retire? Alonso isn't actually technically retiring, is he? He's supposed to come back in 2019. Where I'm still waiting for Mika Hakkinen to come back, and he hasn't done that yet.
Sad. Sparkles, tell us the truth. What's going to happen?
I don't know. There's no one really knows, do they? Like we can sit here and try and guess what's going to happen, but I think
no. Let's not do that. Let's move on to the next topic, which is a Matt Trumpets topic, because Matt, we've not heard from you much this episode so far. The fans want you, and I know you have things to say about America.
I do indeed. Yeah, I didn't really spend a lot of time on Twitter this week because I was on family vacation.
Wait, well, how did you argue with people who have slightly different political opinions to you?
I just sat around and agreed with my family all the time. It was much more fun. I actually had a lot of human interaction this week. Less internet.
Human interaction. Sounds overrated, but you carry on.
I did get an interesting tweet from a friend of mine who's not a Formula One person about Liberty State Park. Now, for those of you who don't know, it's located in New Jersey. There's a golf course right on the edge of it that's very fancy and expensive. And they wanted to build into the park. And the park includes the Statue of Liberty and all those good things. And it just turned up in Bloomberg recently that a new proposal has come about for, wait, a Formula One racetrack with a 100,000 seat grandstand and, better yet, fields for international cricket matches. Go figure.
Wait, stop. Wait, what? Stop.
Yeah, no. I'm so not kidding you. This is literally reported in actual newspaper.
This Skype connection has clearly gone wrong. There's two things wrong with that. Firstly, let's start with cricket. Why are Americans suddenly interested in cricket? The second thing is, we always assumed a New York or a New Jersey Grand Prix would be a street circuit. Did you just say that it was going to be a stadium because I wasn't really listening.
Yeah. This will be a purpose-built racing track with a 100,000-seat grandstand and, as I said, fields for international cricket matches, which actually they play across the street from me as well. So, you know, we do have people who play cricket here. It's hard for you to believe, and I do like to make fun of it. The best is when they play softball and cricket at the same time in the same park. That's a little
the fun. Fear I have, but, Jake, is that cricket will confuse and anger the Americans to the point they start an apocalypse.
I'm going to make the point that every single person is thinking at this point. Where is the market for this? Where is the target audience for this? There is barely an argument to keep the Formula One Grand Prix at Austin. They keep on saying, oh, well, numbers are low, or we're trying to get the Americans into Formula One. They don't really care about Formula One. Matt Trumpet is the biggest American fan of Formula One on the planet, even more so than Chase Carey. So how is it legitimately possible that this company has said, yeah, there's a grey market for this racetrack and cricket pitches in America? Are they mental?
We're being culturally insensitive. If you look into the chat room, Kedamath ER is saying Spanish. You forgot that New Jersey has a lot of Indians and they will watch cricket.
A lot of Southeast Asians live in the area and they South Asians. Okay. If I've misstated that, there are a lot of cricket teams and matches in the New York City area. And I would imagine in New Jersey as well, but more to the point, they're talking about international matches. So if Australia plays England in New Jersey, would you watch that on television? Especially if the New York City skyline was in the background? Why, yes. Yes, you would. And that makes it a popular thing. But here, there is a bit of a catch to this. The first catch is almost all the racetrack will be on private land, but they need to get some parkland in order to make this proposal a reality. And Tom Considine, who's a banking and insurance commissioner, is leading spokesperson for the consortium of himself, an investment bank, and, quote, some people with long affinity in motorsports. So that sounds a bit dodgy to me. But more to the point, a lot of developers have been trying to get their hands on this parkland for quite some time. And the mayor of Jersey City, where said park is located, Stephen Fulop, is basically said the project's noise and traffic would overwhelm surrounding neighborhoods, and it's a non-starter as far as he is concerned. So although it's fun to talk about and it's up there somewhere, unless the state of New Jersey is going to sign off on funding the thing, much like Texas did with the Circuit of the Americas, I got to say, realistically, it does not have, that kind of.
Russell Coburn in the chat room says, cricket only makes sense if you're huffing glue. Like a lot of glue. And that's fair. As a lifelong fan of cricket, I sympathize with that. Sushma Mundal says, what's going on today with the sounds and laughing? Jake is on. Is this your first rodeo? he does say it's enjoyable, though. We both love and hate Jake in exactly the same measure. And Kedarnath says, Matt, also, no one tours Pakistan these days, stating security. So Pakistan play their home series in Sharjah. I'm assuming that's India. So they could as well play in New Jersey. So that's all fair points. Sparkles.
Just in your little explanation there, Matt, I was listing off in my head all the issues that they are facing immediately. And they've only got a proposal in at the moment. So, yeah, like you say, it doesn't really sound like it's going to happen. I think like less than 1% of proposals ever made for these kind of things actually end up going ahead anyway. And also, it doesn't even matter where it is. If the New York skyline was in the background, I will never watch cricket.
This right. sounds even more bizarre than that proposal a few years ago to bring Formula One racing to the streets of Beirut. Seriously, never going to happen.
I tell you what is going to happen, though. We are taking Formula One to the streets of... Well, near the streets of Belgium, like near the streets. I assume there are some streets near Spa-Francorchamps. I don't actually know. I think there's a river. I believe that is what one of the corners is named after. Oh no, actually, it's not technically called Eau Rouge. Eau Rouge is like the old corner with it. Shut up! No one cares. That's what we call it. It's like Brundle objecting to Tifosi. It means something different now to us. It doesn't just mean fans in Italian. We know it as something else. We mean it as fanatic Ferrari fans. Chris, are you going to give us a preview of Belgium or what?
I can do. There are streets very near the track, actually. If you just go beyond where Les Combes is, there's a little gate that actually leads onto the roads that made up the old, old Spa-Francorchamps circuit. So it's a nice little tidbit. And perhaps if you're going there, you can go and visit it yourself. But in terms of a Grand Prix preview, this is going to be a real interesting one because there's been all this talk about Ferrari's power unit gains. Well, we're finally going to get some answers in these next two races. Spa and Monza are very much power circuits. So it's going to be the real test to see if they are now the engine benchmark of Formula One.
I have to say that in the chat room there, Duran Jordan has said Spa has roads. Yeah, but where we're going, we don't need any roads. Yes! Got that line in. Sweet. I rule. Continue saying things. I wasn't listening. I'm sure it's fascinating.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I mean, it's a it's a track of two halves, really. You know, we all know it's got the very fast and high speed sectors one and three, middle sector. It's all about the twisty stuff. So Red Bull usually come here, take a little bit of wing off and still dominate the middle sector and lose time in the first and the thirds. But how much progress on the engine side has Renault made? Is going to be a good question that we'll get to answer as well. And how much of Red Bull not made in comparison because they've been apparently missing out on upgrades.
It's about time for a wet Belgian Grand Prix, isn't it? I mean, we have wet sessions over the course of the weekend, like a wet Thursday or a wet Friday afternoon or the morning of qualifying is always wet. I think it's about time we had a wet Belgian Grand Prix. Mind you, we're talking in 2018, so if it rains, we're going to start the race behind a safety car and not actually have any wet running, despite the fact we have wet tyres. So why not just do it in the dry? That's me being pessimistic again.
Well, I don't know. It kind of livened up Hockenheim a little bit, the rain did, didn't it?
It did, to be fair. It did. You know, for a good 90 seconds, it did spice things up.
Yeah, at least until Vettel drove into a wall. But that's a separate story for another time.
He shouldn't have done that.
I'll tell you who the biggest question mark is for me is actually Haas. I'm going to be very interested to see what they turn up with because they did skip the last test in Hungary. They do seem to be kind of happy, and I can only wait to see what sort of carnage Grosjean inflicts on the rest of the field at the start.
See, there's a good argument to suggest in a load of technical data that Haas is in fact the fourth quickest car ahead of Renault, and really it's been the operational aspects that have let them, and you know, that's why Renault are ahead of them. These next two races could be really important for them, especially if Renault have been lacking updates that we've been talking about and, you know, on a power loss compared to a Ferrari-powered Haas. These next two races could be really crucial for them.
Okay, and if we're going to look at other interesting things, which I agree with you there, shockingly enough, it would be to compare Red Bull's performance on a track like this to itself, and then look at Renault's performance on a track like this to itself from an earlier race and see if I think it might be possible to start judging whether or not they really are being hobbled in the way they claim by Renault since they announced that they had found a new companion and they were going to be moving out.
And the fact that they're using different fuel from Renault as well, which I think we brought up a few shows ago, and I still can't get my head around why they do that.
Jake Sanson.
I was just going to say, I was talking earlier about it being a wet Belgian Grand Prix and how nice it would be. I have just checked the Met Office weather forecast for the weekend, and we are going to get rain on Saturday at 5 p.m. So don't get your hopes up. It's going to be absolutely awful.
If it does rain, we have to go back to Hungary qualifying and how suddenly Red Bull and Ferrari, having looked so good on Friday, were suddenly nowhere because of the different conditions and how their two cars work against a car like the Mercedes in the rain. So rain could favor Mercedes quite heavily or perhaps not if things are working differently. There's a lot of question marks, but I think Mercedes will probably be wanting it to be wet.
Yes, the chat room, Rob Graham points out rather aptly, did you know it can rain on part of the track and dry on others? If they mention this during the race or any part of the weekend, you must drink a lot.
And I'm also being called out by someone who sent me an email during the live stream. Actually, really appreciate that. Apparently, I've seriously misjudged the political situation between Pakistan and India, and Pakistan would definitely not be playing a cricket match in India. Thank you very much for educating me on that matter. Guys, the show is basically over, so there's a few things to do. Matt presumably has comment of the week, but to give him time to do that, I'm going to say, Chris, you are a man on the move, aren't you? You're always saying to me, I'm very busy for the thing. I can't tell you until 30 seconds before the podcast whether I can turn up. So presumably you're doing something fantastic when Missed Apex is your very last desperation choice. If no other pretty girls ask you out, you'll go out with the unattractive girl that is Missed Apex.
No, you're great, darling. And I really like spending time with you. It's just that, you know, there are these other things that come up, and they have this thing called money as well. No, it's a lot of other things. You know, there could be some autosport work next weekend. I'll know at some point during the week, because of course I've been helping out with the MotoGP coverage for autosport and motorsport.com. So that could be happening next weekend, amongst a lot of other things as well. Supposed to be going to Valencia in a few weeks as well. So
Darren Rusk is basically saying, you're saying, it's not you, it's me. Where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at @CStevens_journo.
Let's go to Jake Sanson. Jake, I've spent the whole day commentating with you. You are an absolutely fantastic commentator. It's a series where I have been the lead commentator of late, but when you're there, I really don't need to do anything. Kind of feel guilty picking up the check because you are so on it. You're completely in your element calling races.
That's very kind of you. I've had a very busy last few weeks, actually. My next major task coming up, other than the British Championships I'm going to be commentating for, is going out to Europe for the FIA karting. We have two world championships coming up for KZ in Belgium, in Genk, which is, I think, the weekend of the Italian Grand Prix. And then at the end of September, we go to Kristianstad for the FIA World Championships, which is where Lando Norris won world karting. Verstappen won there, Hamilton won there, Vettel won there, all the big daddies win there. My task for those two weekends is to sit down and have a conversation which can be recorded with three big names for the Missed Apex podcast, if I could do so. They are, namely, Nico Rosberg. He will be there. Juan Pablo Montoya, he will be there. Felipe Massa, he will be there. So I'm going to try and grab those for you if you guys are all interested.
Jake, you also have some Formula One employment in that you do the circuit guides for Force India, and they're good.
Yeah, apparently Sergio Perez quite likes watching them. I didn't actually realize that until the media exec guy at Force India told me. Oh, Sergio loved the one you did at Hockenheim. I'm like, oh, thank you, Sergio. So hopefully I'm going to hang out at Force India at some point and try and get some content.
Stop
there.
Stop waffling on. Tell people where to find you on the internet.
@JakeSanson on Twitter and Facebook, on Instagram, @JakeSansonOfficial.
Jake, were you slightly concerned when Force India went into administration? Were you still making videos for them during that period?
Good question. I was still making videos for them at that point. I was told not to worry. Everything will sort itself out. Don't panic. And it all worked out for the best. So clearly they obviously had some game plan I wasn't aware of at the time. So good to see that everything was saved.
Game plan. I see what you did there.
Yeah, you were brilliant.
Pretty cryptic. Let's go on to Old Man Trumpets. You don't say nothing, but you must know something, Trumpets. What are you up to?
Well, let's see. What am I up to? I'm almost done with all my family vacationing.
No one cares about that.
Right. Okay. I'll move on to potential shows. We're working on a Tech Time, hopefully to get recorded. And
we absolutely
out the door
care about that. And by the way, I was speaking to Carter on Tuesday. Are you going to join me, Matthew Carter?
I am going to join you now that we've decided that the 22nd is indeed Tuesday. Yes.
Sorry, I got that. My admin isn't amazing. Thanks, Wes.
You're a busy man. This is okay. I had a feeling it would turn out that way, but yes. And so the Tech Time, the Carter thing, this will all be very, very exciting. And beyond that, I think I have a comment of the week.
Excellent. Also, before you go to comment of the week, we've got the Spa Grand Prix, so we'll be doing our normal race review at 8 p.m. on Sunday, UK time. And then on the Tuesday after that, we're going to be talking to Joe Sayward. We haven't spoken to him for a while. Well, I have, because I recorded his live show, but he's not been on Missed Apex for a little while. So he'll be on after Spa, I think. And then straight after that, it's Monza. So we're right back into the thick of not only Formula One action, but also Missed Apex action. All of that gives me enough time to find this button.
Comment of the week.
Lay it on me, trumpets.
Well, this is a tough one. I think there's a lot of competition out there because it's summer break. And so people are feeling like there may be opportunities that were normally closed off. But we start with Mark Greenhow. The thing he, Alonso, can predict is that he's got absolutely no chance of finishing in the top five. Christopher Fonseca, who is not supposed to be competing, says, in Alonso's defense, him leaving F1 this year was incredibly predictable.
Yep, true. He's not barred anymore, by the way.
No. Andy Whitney is in with, oh God, horrible image, quote, tainted, in same thought as Flavio.
Who's your winner, buddy?
I'm not there yet. Race control, sparkles to serve, one race ban, and 3 points on super license for driving with an expired meme. Bruce Wayne, I'm very confident in my prediction that Red Bull and McLaren will have, in fact, two drivers next season. You heard it here first, people. EMH 2212, smart podcasts have bumpers, if only to withstand crashing.
It's true.
Cricket is named after the thing you hear while people are playing it by Bruce Wayne, but I think the winner really has to be Hansink with, is it compression socks?
Oh man, that probably does have to be the winner. Well done, Hansink. You are the winner of
Comment of the Week.
Next time you hear us on this feed, it will be after the Belgian Grand Prix. Enjoy it and remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex News. Thanks, Sparkles. The show running this week was 100% done by Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens. Thanks for putting that together, Chris.
Oh, no worries, man. Always happy to help.
Hashtag Team Map. Thanks for helping. So,
So
tell me, what comments have made your podcast show real? Like, what is the point that you've made on Missed Apex that you think is so insightful that you feel that it would lead to further employment? Because, honestly, I sit here going, the only reason you're on the show is to give us a very easy punching bag for us to express our point. It's like you go out of your way to say the most wrong thing you can, like that Triple Crown conversation we just had.
Just because you disagree with me, Spanners, does not make it wrong.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.